We've been looking at this book, especially looking at the whole subject of how do you deal with a person who is bitter. And I'm talking especially, I think that bitterness, you could call it spiritual depression, because depression in a person and bitterness are very closely tied together. I think a lot of us, if it's either happened to us in our life or happened to someone that we're very close to, we've been touched by people who turn bitter. I'm thinking especially about people who turn bitter spiritually, but maybe it's a parent, a loved one, sometimes a person you're married to. For reasons that are beyond us, they turn bitter. And the question is, what do you do about it? And one of the things that has just amazed me about the Bible is that the Bible is a tremendous source book for finding out how to handle problems. Very specifically, when you read the lives of and the narratives, you know what I mean by narratives, the stories about the lives of the people in the Bible, there's a reason why they're there. We're told in the New Testament they're there for an example to teach us. And we can look at their lives and look at the process and say, this brings a problem. And we can say, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. God also gives us these stories because he says, this is how you get a blessing. This is how you turn somebody's life around. You do this, and you do this, and you do this. Now, again, I want to caution you as we're going to begin tonight. God is not like a gigantic Pez dispenser, you know, where you just pull it back and you get what you want. Like, God, do it for me. Sometimes we treat God, you know, we put our quarter in. Now, God, we want what we want. We're dealing with a sovereign God here. We're dealing with a God who demands our obedience, and he isn't our servant. We are his servants. And yet he shows us, he said, this is how I'm pleased to work. This is how I work. He says, you follow this way and I'll bless you. That's his promise. Now, we didn't make that up. We didn't have a bunch of people sit down and say, well, try this out. God says, I'm showing you this because if you do this, I'll bless. And if you do these things, you will see changes in people's lives. As we begin tonight, I just want to read the first verse and the second verse of Ruth chapter 2. Now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth, and of the family of Elimelech. Now remember, Elimelech was Naomi's husband who had passed away, and his name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said unto Naomi, let me now go into the field and glean ears of corn. Okay, now this is not what we call corn. There was no corn and there is no corn in the Middle East until it comes there from the United States. You know how it is. My people call it maize. You know, that's from the Americas. Corn in King James English refers to any kind of a grain that has little nubbins on it, like wheat. You know, there's not a whole lot of difference when you stop and think about it between the way wheat is shaped and the way in what we call corn is shaped. It's got a stalk coming off, and it's got all the little fruit seeds around it. So any kind of grain that has the little fruit or seeds or whatever you want, a kernels coming out of it. That's what the word corn means, by the way. It's something with a kernel. Corn beef doesn't have corn in it. What does it have? Little kernels of salt. It was salted beef. Okay, and so corn does not mean what we call corn, okay? And they were not incorrect. It's not that they guessed wrong. It was just a word in Elizabethan English to signify any kind of grain that had the ears on it. Okay, so she's going out. This is actually the time of the barley harvest. It's for barley. Let me go into the field and glean the ears of barley, if you will, after the one in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said unto her, go, my daughter. One of the things that you'll always find true in the Bible is if you want to find where God blesses, the point where you can actually see God's blessing, it's where two things come together. And it is just amazing to me how often that principle is true. God works where two things come together. On so many different planes, I've seen this to be true. Jesus Christ is where two things came together. He was where God and man comes together. That is, by the way, I think one of the reasons why God has made it that there will be males and females in this world. That he will bless where the two of them come together. And that's why how God has designed for there to be the blessing of children on that. It's God's plan in this world. One of them is that he doesn't work through one thing. He brings two things together to produce something special. And here, and constantly in the Bible, the two things you find coming together are God's sovereignty and some human initiative. Okay? God's sovereign working above and beyond our comprehension and human initiative. God saying, I'm going to bless it when men take an initiative and do something. That is how God has chosen to save people and to have people be born again. Those two things have to happen. Okay? The human initiative is we're supposed to give the gospel. That simple. We're supposed to give it. God, who chose who would be saved, chose how they would be saved. Same God. He said, I've chosen the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. And it's the human initiative and God's sovereignty. You can give the gospel to somebody time after time after time again, but it's when God in his sovereignty touches it, touches the human activity and God's sovereignty touches, that a person is again. That is the same process that's going to happen in the life person who's been spiritually torn apart, somebody who's bitter. We talk about these things kind of cold sometimes, almost calculating. But when you're inside a family, and it's one of your parents, and you're living in the house who's turned bitter, and you see what it's doing to the rest of the family, when it's your spouse, when it's your child that happens to, the pain is enormous. And you want an answer. You know, people don't want the pastor to come and to give them a theology book or a theology lesson. What can I do about it? Well, here is the place to learn the truth in church. You learn the theology. You learn how God works. And then you can go home and you can see your situation and you can apply it in your own situation. The principle's the same. The way God works it out is different in every person. It's just like being born again. God doesn't have a separate kind of operation for every person who gets born again. One way of a person getting born again, but in their given circumstances, it happens through some different circumstances the same way. We'll learn some of these lessons, and especially here when we see bitterness. God takes human initiative and his sovereignty. And notice how he sets them back verse to verse. And then the wonderful thing about this passage is you can see it happening and you can see Naomi recognizing this process and Naomi seeing that. But notice, first we see her initiative. Let me go. She's talking to her, by the way, it's interesting, why didn't she just go out and do it? Because her mother-in-law is the head of the household. And this phrase, let me go, I pray, is a request. She's saying, I'm requesting you as the head of the household, let me go out and do this. Allow me to do this. Allow me to act on behalf of the family. I want to take the initiative. I want to go out there. I want to do something. And so Naomi allowed her. Notice in verse 3. And she went and she came and gleaned in the field after the reapers. This next sentence is so terrible in English, modern English, but it really makes you stop and notice. I like the King James because it makes you stop and notice the activity of God. You couldn't say this sentence, and if I were you, I wouldn't write this sentence in an English class. But it's perfect in that it makes you see, it patterns itself after the Hebrew, and it makes you see what's happening. And her hapt was to light. Actually, in the Hebrew, it says her hap happened. Her hapt to light. That's her hap was to light. What is a hap? You ever ask yourself the noun? What is a hap? Yeah, it's a fortune. That's where we get the word happy. Fortunate. Blessed. It's her fortune. Her lot. Just her luck. Okay, if you want to use pagan terms, all right. Just her luck. Her hap, her fortune was to light. Her lot lotted and came to rest. The way that they determined the will of God, one way was to cast a lot, literally into the lap, but to cast the lot down and to see where it landed, to see who it fell on. And her lot came to Lot on the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. There is no way anybody can miss the sovereignty of God in that action. She takes the initiative to go out, and all her thought is I'm going to go out, and I'm going to do what it takes, and I'm going to make an effort. And God directed her to the one spot. Not only was we going to see where she'd get her physical needs met, but where she would get her spiritual needs met, and where Naomi would get her spiritual needs met. When those two things come together, that's when God works. That's the principle. That's the overall principle. Now let me show you a method that God uses, and you'll see it over and over again in the lives of people who are bitter. I'm just going to review the story. You know it, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but she goes into the field, and she starts gleaning. God has led her to the right spot. Boaz comes to the field, and he notices her. God causes Boaz to notice her. And again, we're only dealing with certain things from the story of Ruth. So I am picking out certain elements to talk about one level of story. So we're not discussing everything, but it's her character that he sees. He sees that she's diligent. He sees that she's out there working. He sees that she didn't take to the streets to support herself, that she took to the field to support herself. And he sees all of that. And then he calls her over and he asks the people about her. And they say, yeah, that's the Moabite girl who came back with Naomi, which must have made a dent in them. She came back to help her mother-in-law, and here she is out there. And we won't go through everything, but he sees that this is a woman of character. He sees it. He looks and he can tell by something as simple as somebody reaching down and picking up an ear of corn, well, an ear of grain, he can see a lot about her character. Don't ever kid yourself. Your character is seen in what you do. People can tell a lot about you by the way you do your work and the kind of job that you do. I can sit in a class, and in my Arabic class, I don't even know the real names of the people in class. They gave us all Arabic names. And now I know Huda and Rithman and Rasan and, you know, and all Nuria. I know all these people, but I don't know their, but I could tell you what kind of students they are just from sitting in class with them, from the way they do their homework, from the way they answer a question, from the attention they pay. I can tell you a lot about these people. And what was inside of Ruth was being seen. And so Boaz responds to it. And in the end, all these kindnesses, he heaps all this blessing on her. And he says, I want you to leave some on purpose for her. Because the Bible commanded that you don't strip a field bare, that you leave some for the poor. I still believe that God wants that as a system in what you have today. All your money that God gives to you isn't for your family. A person could say, well, wait a second, if I leave that out in the field, I'm taking it out of my family's mouth. Well, God didn't give you your money just for your family. He gave you your money for other people as well. Other people, I think it starts in the house of God, but you do kindness beyond that. And your money isn't just yours. And Boaz practiced that, but he said, leave some handfuls on purpose. What's a handful? It's as much as you can pick up. You know, her job was to pick up, and the problem is, if when you're gleaning, is to get a handful, one here, one there. He says, leave a whole handful on purpose occasionally for her. So now we come back to the story that we want to pick up with Naomi in verse 18. In verse 17, let me start. So being Ruth gleaned in the field until the even, meaning until it was dark, and she beat out what she had gleaned. Okay, gleaning's only half the story, you know. Then you've got to take all the raw stuff you've got there and you got to turn it into something that's usable. So often we glamorize this kind of life. This is a rough life, and it was rough on women especially. A lot of hard work involved. And it was about an ephah of barley. That's about a peck of barley. Now, you might not think much of that, but that can supply a lot of needs of a person. And do you know how much you would have had to have gleaned so that just the heads alone were a peck? That's a lot, isn't it? I mean, that is a whole lot that she had received. She took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. And she brought forth and gave her what she had reserved until she was sufficed. She had to eat part of it for lunch, by the way. You know, she gleaned and she ate part of it. So her mother-in-law saw what was left over and said unto her, "Where hast thou gleaned today, and where wroughtest thou?" Where did you work? To wrought means to work, to do. Where did you get all this stuff from? Blessed be the one that did take knowledge of thee. First point, we're just going to go through real quickly the four steps that God uses to turn a person from bitterness. The first point, Naomi saw that somebody had been kind to Ruth. It starts from outside the person who's bitter. It doesn't start inside that person who's bitter. God does not begin his work inside of you. He begins his work with somebody outside of you. When you were born again, he began his work with somebody preaching the gospel to you. He began his work with somebody writing the Bible, with somebody printing the Bible, somebody who witnessed to the person who witnessed to you, who witnessed. See what I'm saying? God begins his work there. It's not like inside of you there's some little spark that you catch attention, and it always starts outside of you. That's why when you look at a person who's bitter and you say there's nothing there, there's nothing to work with, they're empty, they don't care, they're apathetic. Well, I got good news for you. God starts his work outside of them and he puts something inside of them. God doesn't depend on there being something inside of a person to work with. God, otherwise, we'd be in big trouble. I mean, there's not much there to work with for some people. Some of us, you know, throw up your hands and go, "Woo, this is big time problems." But God, he starts his work outside. And what he does is he catches the attention of a person with his bounty and with his grace. And that person who is bitter, God causes them to see that he's a kind God and he's a good God. He makes them see what he does. And often what he does is he uses what's here. He uses somebody's kindness that catches their attention. See, the person who's bitter is turned into themselves. And remember what Naomi had to say before. God left me empty. I went out full. God left me empty. God took away my husband. God took away my sons. God took away everything from me. By the way, they lost all their property. They wouldn't have had any property when they left. After they left, they would have sold everything, all of their property, and left. She didn't even have a place to come back to. She didn't even have the old homestead to come back to. And she had this idea that God didn't provide. God caused the famine. God took away. And the first thing God does is he proves, and he says, "I'm kind, and I'm good, and I take care of you." And when you see a person who's turned bitter, I don't care whether it's against God, formally against the church, which is usually just a surrogate for God. It's easier to get mad at the church than it is to God in our mind. That person will see God is good. God is kind. And it was the act of kindness that caught the attention. She saw her coming in with that peck of barley. She'd done it herself. She knew. How does a person glean that much? You know, you go out in the field and you just plain reap, and you'd have to reap a whole lot in order to beat out and to get just the grains, the heads, and to get that much. And how is a person just going to pick up? She knew that somebody had to have done it on purpose. When a person is bitter, I think one of the best ways to minister to them is through simple acts of kindness. They don't have to be attended by a lecture. You don't have to add a lecture along with them. As a parent, that is probably one of my greatest failings. Everything seems to have to be accompanied by a lesson. You know, you just can't give something. You gotta, and as I mentioned before, it's like with a string attached. And we don't. When a person is bitter, in most cases, your lecture isn't going to do. You're not get their attention. God will. And the simple acts of kindness. By the way, that's one way when there's a death in the family that we start right out with acts of kindness. Just simple acts of helping people and what can we do to help and noticing people. And God catches their attention. And the first thing is they see that act of kindness. And I want you to see how God pulls from that. It's like a thread. You know, you ever had that on your sweater? One little thread to grab hold of. And then pretty soon, you know, your arm's up to here, you know, and you're white. What happened to that? you know, you got this big old whatever. I don't know how it happened. I didn't do it, you know. Well, God takes, and you watch how this thread gets pulled and pulled and pulled, and what he's going to work with here. First, she notices and she sees that much barley, and she said, somebody must have been kind to you. Somebody must have done something special and abundant for you, because you couldn't have gone out and gotten that on your own. There is something unusual about this. Now, notice. And she showed her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought. She told her mother-in-law whose field she'd worked in, is what that means. And said, the man's name with whom I work today was Boaz. And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, blessed be the Lord who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. The first step is, as we mentioned, you see the kindness. The second step is God awakens the person to the fact that he's behind that kindness. It's of me. They see the initiative first. They see the human side first. And then God opens their eyes and said, this wasn't of man, this was of me. This came from me. I'm behind this. She looked at that, and as soon as she saw it was Boaz, all of a sudden Naomi was just overwhelmed. She said, this was no accident. Blessed be the Lord. She turned from blessing the person to blessing the Lord. What you're after when you want to minister to a person who is bitter is not to turn their attention on you. A lot of bitter people will think that you're just, you know, the bee's knees, you know, the cat's pajamas. You're just so wonderful and a kind person, and they stay in their bitterness. What they have to see is that God is using you, that God is behind it, and what you're doing for them is God using you to do something in their life. That's what they have to see. And God sometimes will push you to the limit to make it painfully obvious that that's not you doing it, it's him doing it. And sometimes that's one reason why we can't get past this step in helping people. We're not willing sometimes. It's kind of a pleasant feeling that somebody tells us what a nice guy we are. You know, how wonderful you are. We kind of like that. You know what we do? We just derail any hope of God using us to bless. That doesn't mean God won't bring that person out of their bitterness, because God's sovereign and he works and he cares about the person. But God won't use any vessel that takes glory for itself. He's chosen never to do that. It's one of the things about God's choices that is a principle in the Bible. God will never choose to use something that detracts attention from himself as the source. And so what happens here is it's so obvious that God is using Boaz, and Naomi's eyes just, she said, oh, God is faithful. She sees that God is providentially at work. And when a person is bitter, they have to have their eyes turned back on God. And God uses someone to turn their eyes to him. And he always does that. When a person is unsaved, God uses someone to go to them and to turn their eyes back to him. When a person is bitter, when a person is hurt, when a person is sinning, when a person is out in so many different ways walking from God, God will use someone in their initiative to turn their eyes back to him. And what happens here is that she saw that God was still present. Earlier, it was interesting. God's abandoned me. God's left me. But here, I came back empty. Well, now she realizes through this blessing, something very simple, by the way. Just food for supper. Enough for supper is all there was, by the way. Just enough for supper. Because if you know, if you take that much, how much bread are you going to get out of that? By the time you pound it all down and get all that out and turn it into flour, you know, you're not going to have a living to make off of that. But that simple blessing, and then she saw that Boaz, and she said, oh, he's a kinsman. And the second step in the process, first, the kindness catches their attention. Second, they're able to see behind the kindness and see the providence of God. Human initiative draws men's attention to God's providence. Now notice what happens. Naomi said unto her, blessed be the Lord who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. How many times has she used that phrase? And the last time she used that phrase, it was in bitterness. It's interesting, she used it to Ruth. You've been kind to the living and to the dead. We're going to see that connection coming back in here again. She told Ruth that. And then she mentioned that again later in bitterness, but notice. And then Naomi says unto her, the man is near of kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen. This little phrase, underline it, is a key to the next step. What had happened in her bitterness is she'd pushed everybody away from her. Everybody. God had taken away what was most precious to her, so she pushed everybody away from her. She tried to push her daughters-in-law and pushed one away. And when Ruth declares her devotion, she still doesn't have anything to do with Ruth. Oh, come along if you want. Then she comes back to Bethlehem, and she acts as if Ruth is nobody. Ruth is chopped liver. You know, I'm empty. But notice what she does here. She identifies with Ruth. What does she say? The man is what? Near kin unto us. Not to me. Not to me. She doesn't say, hey, this is a kinsman. This is my husband's kinsman, which, by the way, is how he was identified in verse 1, of the family of Elimelech. She doesn't point to that. She said, he is our near kinsman, one of the next of our kin. She's starting to identify with Ruth. Ruth has gone out into the field. Ruth is showing that she is, in physical, real way, is showing, I want to be part of this family and I want to be a blessing. And it's won her mom's heart over. She had done it while she was in the home. She stuck with her. She proved it. She had been a source of blessing. And now Naomi is starting to identify. It's one of our kinsmen. Before, she thought of her daughters-in-laws as Moabitesses. Go back to what did she say? To your family. She didn't think of them as part of hers. I had mentioned to you that one of the biggest problems in bitterness is that people push everybody away. They're isolated. They want nothing to do with you. They try to force you out. They don't see any connection with you. To them, it's like it's too much of a problem. They don't want to deal with the problem. It's that, you know, what it really is inside is they don't want to deal with their spiritual problem. It's so easy to feel hurt and to push everybody away who might make you step out of that hurt. But God works, and he shows kindness and a person's kindness and a person's faithfulness, and then it points to his hand. And then that person identifies with the person who's been kind to them. They say, look at that. There is a connection between us. We are family. We do care. I was pointing that out last week, that one of the greatest things that enables you to minister to a person is a relationship. God hasn't chosen to work through strangers. He's chosen to work through relatives, through family. But that person has to see you as family. That person has to be able to put their finger on it and to say, hey, that's someone close to me. And this is a tremendous step here. Counselors look for this, by the way, when they're dealing with somebody who's depressed or bitter. When they see that that person is starting to think of themselves in terms of a family again. When they see that a woman who has lost her husband, when she thinks of herself first, maybe again as a mother. Then, maybe sooner or later, someday, she might think of herself as someone who could get married again. That's a tremendous step, and you look for that. When I don't know if you've ever had someone in your family who's had a very bitter experience with becoming a widow, especially young widows. Very bitter experience sometimes. But they have to learn not to think of themselves in terms of the person who died, but in terms of people who are alive. Common sense, isn't it? But God produces it. God sees, makes this connection. He is one of our kin. He is one of ours. You, me, and him. Which, by the way, is the triangle of blessing that God's going to use here. God's going to hook up Naomi and Ruth and Boaz. God is going to use Naomi as the link between Ruth and Boaz. That's God's way of blessing Naomi. Look at the next step. And then notice, what's it say in verse 21? And Ruth the Moabitess said, never leaving out the fact, that's what's emphasizing. She called her kin. And that's why the next verse says Ruth the Moabitess, is to point out to you that she wasn't kin in one sense and she was in another. And Naomi was choosing to think of her as kin. He said unto me also, thou shalt keep fast by my young men. Stick with my servants. Stick with my servants until they've ended all my harvest. He told me I could stay out there until they finished the entire harvest. And Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it's good, my daughter, that thou go out with his maidens, that they meet thee not in any other field. She said, stick to it. Don't go in any other field. Don't be found in any other field. That's the place of God's blessing. Stick to it. This goes all the way back to a lesson that they were supposed to learn in the beginning. They left Bethlehem, didn't they? They left the place where God would bless them. They went into a place where they thought God would bless them, and they lost everything. And now she's saying, you stick with it. Stay right there. Don't go looking around for something better. Let's not go trying to find out. You just stick with this because this is the place where God will bless. There comes a thread here where Naomi is recognizing there's a way in which God blesses. This is where God's going to bless. Let's not leave that place. That's a tremendous step in and of itself, because now she's not thinking of herself as the person. Let me flip over here in verse 20. The Almighty hath dealt bitterly with me. She's thinking of herself as the person that the Almighty is blessing, and she wants to stay where he's blessing. This is a sidetrack, but pastors can't avoid them sometimes. Do you think of yourself that way? Do you look at your life and say, you know, God's blessed me here, and I wouldn't leave this for all the tea in China? You know, we give our kids the feeling sometimes of go out and get the best job you can. If that job doesn't work out, find another one. If that job doesn't work out, find another one. Well, it's true. When people are young, they get what we call an entry-level position. And sometimes those positions aren't designed to have them move all the way to the top of the chart. You know, that's just the way business is. So I'm not saying when young people change jobs that there's something wrong, because that's the business world. But we would all get nervous if our children get one good opportunity and they haven't exploited it and they haven't been a blessing to the job, and then they move to another job. They get a little bit better offer. You know, I get $5 an hour, I get $5.10 an hour, so the next week they're over here, and I can get this over here. All of a sudden, we worry, don't we? We're saying, stick with it. Stick with it. When you found a place where God's blessing, stay there. The same with the church. God blessed you there. I don't care if the times are tough. You stay there till you get everything he's going to give you. Well, Naomi is catching on to this. And then notice, Ruth. So Ruth kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean until the end of the barley harvest and of the wheat harvest. Barley comes first, and then there's a pause, and then the wheat harvest is through the summer months. And she dwelt with her mother-in-law. And now notice the last step in verse 3. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, says unto her, my daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? There's the turnaround. Now she's not thinking about herself anymore. She's thinking about her daughter-in-law. God took her from someone who could only think about herself, someone who had only concerned with what's happened to me, someone crying the blues, and God's turned her into somebody who's thinking about how to bless her daughter-in-law. And that's the breakthrough. That's the point where that person is actually taking the initiative themselves. Because again, where does God bless? When human initiative and his sovereignty meet together. When man's sovereignty and when God's sovereignty and man's initiative meet, God blesses there. But God is not going to bless Naomi until she takes some initiative, until she does something. Up until this point, God has been so good and there's been so much progress. But you got to take that first step yourself. It's got to be something that Naomi does. And now Naomi says, I'm going to help Ruth. I'm going to help Ruth. She looks at that situation and she saw God's the kindness of Boaz. She saw God's providence. She identified with Ruth, and you know what she did? She didn't say, God, you're so good to me. God, you're feeding me. She said, God, you've got something for Ruth in this. And she cared about Ruth. And the person who is bitter has to start caring about other people more than themselves. And they got to turn their focus outside. And they got to look and say, how can I help that person? A person who's bitter about church and their experience at church, they got to turn around so they're more concerned about the unsaved who need to hear the gospel than about what happened to them. How many people stop giving the gospel simply because they've been hurt, simply because they had a bad experience with it? What that boils down to is you don't care if these people go to hell. You've been so hurt, you're thinking about yourself rather than their spiritual needs. What about the people all around you who are just, you see families just crumbling because they don't have God's truth in the center of the family. And you don't care about that. You're so worried about what happened to you. You come to church and you leave the church in bitterness because of what's happened to you. How about I need to be at that church to help that problem? I need to be at that church to put something into other people's life. I'm going to stop worrying about what happened to me and start thinking about how I can be a blessing to somebody else. You see, there's the focus, and God uses this process. He doesn't do it overnight. It's not like Ruth woke up one morning and said, I'm cured, you know, and comes traipsing out and like that. God does use a process, and God started outside of her. But in the end, she had to do something. She had to take an initiative herself. And she turns to Ruth and he says, isn't it right that I should seek your peace, your welfare? That's what it means here by seek rest for you, that it may be well with you. And that's when you know a person has been cured from the bitterness. By the way, you can be cured for something and still have the symptoms. You know, you can get over. You can be cured of a sickness and still be weak for a long time. And so I'm not saying that as soon as this happens, the person doesn't have any after effects. But that's when the person is over it, when they start to look. And what we're going to see next week is God uses the same process. That initiative, he blesses with his sovereignty. And he joins the two of them together to produce another blessing. And Ruth is then blessed. Then God takes Boaz and goes through the same procedure with Boaz. Let me come through. I'm just going to deal with this briefly. I know we're taking a lot, but you got to draw this connection because it's what the God's doing the same thing three and four times over. Boop, 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 to say, are you watching? Human initiative. God's sovereignty produces a blessing. Someone has to see it. Someone has to recognize God's hand. And then they go out and take initiative, and God blesses that. Ruth, Naomi turns to Ruth, and she says, I want to be a blessing to you. Here's what you do. And she shows them how to get a guy. I know, girls, start taking notes. Guys, take a few notes, too. That's what she does. Here is how you get this guy. It has nothing to do, by the way, with the way we would do it today in today's dating atmosphere. But she does. And you know what, Ruth? Ruth does it. And you know what? It works. You know, that Naomi was a wise old bird. And so she comes back and she says, I did it. And look what happened. What do I do now? Look at verse 18. She comes back, and by the way, she comes back with more barley this time. Verse 18, then she said, sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will what? Fall. The same word that was used for God's sovereignty earlier. For the man will not rest until he finish the thing this day. She knew a thing or two about men, and she said, I'll tell you, this guy's going to get out there, and he's going to take the initiative. Then went Boaz up to the gate. Boaz has to take the initiative. What happened is Ruth took the initiative and worked, and then Naomi took the initiative through using her daughter-in-law. Now Boaz has to take the initiative and go up. And when all three of them go through the same process, that's when God gives them a family, that's when God blesses, that's when God gives them everything. Same process. God has a principle at work here. And all these steps, I think you can see them in different ways at different times, but learn the principle. It's when you see God's hand of blessing on your initiative, when you see an act of kindness because of your initiative, the kindness you did turns a person's eyes to God, not to yourself. It turns the person's eyes to God. And then they look at you as an instrument of God, as a means of blessing of God. That's how they look at you. And then they themselves have to do something. They say, I want to take initiative. I want to be a blessing. I want to have the same thing going on in my life that's going on in your life. Then God blesses them and they do the same thing. That's how God created it to be. One to the other to the other. You know, you only have to split one atom to start an atom bomb. If you only split one atom, not much happens. But when you split one atom, that splits a bunch of others, and that splits a bunch of others, and pretty soon, you know, it's crispy critters for whoever happens to be around. That's how God designed it in spiritual matters as well. And if we could get a hold of that and start to use it instead of sitting back, you know, God never intended for his sovereignty for you to sit back. He intended for you to say, God blesses, and I want to take the initiative, and I want to be part of this. Let's pray, shall we? Oh, Father, I praise you tonight for everything you've done, and I thank you. And I just ask that as a church, we would be people who grab hold of your blessings, who want them. We've no right to claim a single one, and we're not here because we think that we can manipulate you. Oh, how stupid that would be, Father. But you've shown us what pleases you, and you've asked us to walk in these ways. You've demanded that we seek your blessing, and so we do it tonight. Bless our church. Make us grow, Father. Make us be what you would have us to be. If our hearts are wrong in any of these matters we've talked about tonight, change us. If you can look at our lives, Father, and the things that you desire for us to do to please you and to be a blessing to other people, would you show them tonight? Would no one leave here using this message for someone else but for their very own life? Do your word. Do your work through your word, we pray. In Jesus' name.